come you masters of war. You that build the big guns, you that build the death planes, you that build all the bombs, you that hide behind walls, you that hide behind discs. I just don't want you to know I can see through your masks. You that never done nothing but build to destroy, you play with my world like it's your little toy. You put a gun in my hand and you hide from my eyes. Then you turn and run farther when the fast bullets fly. Like Judas of old.
You lie in DC. Good morning, and thanks for tuning in to Political Perspectives. I'm Linda Olson Osterlund, your host today, and that was Bob Dylan and Masters of War, a song that is as relevant today as it ever was, and it's very relevant. Today's program is about war, the incredible expansion of war that's happened since the Trump regime took power. I had promised you Medea Benjamin, and I apologize. We got our time zones mixed up, and Medea right now is in a demonstration in Washington, D.C., I believe. But she was great. She got us a substitute, and it's not any small deal. It's Ariel Gold. She is the person responsible at Code Pink, the grassroots women's organization that she is part of and that Medea funded. And she's been responsible for the Middle East area. For many years, she worked focusing on Palestine alone, but she's moved over to working with all of those for Code Pink. She's a longtime activist. She has a bachelor's degree in policy and policy analysis and management, and a master's degree in social work. And she helped design Friends of Sabeel, a North America's Drop the G4S campaign to end Israel's detention of Palestinian children. I'm really happy to have her come with us today, to be on the line with us today. Now, this will be a call-in show, so I'm going to give you that number now, but I'm not going to open the lines for about 15 more minutes. The number is 503-231-8187, and we really do want to hear from you. Welcome to KVOO, Ariel.
Hi, thanks so much for having me on.
Well, thank you for being available at the last minute, and thanks, Medea, for thinking of you. Obviously, you guys work closely, and she had many good things to say about you. I wanted to do today's show because I am, as so many of us are, very aware of the incredible, how could we avoid it? The incredible escalation of war efforts on the part of the United States since the Trump regime came in. And we were in an era where Obama had expanded war endlessly throughout his whole administration, never really backing off from war, in fact, extending it to other countries, building drone bases, et cetera. But we seem to have taken a huge leap forward. And I wanted to talk to people who are active in the fight against war, and that's why I turned to Code Pink, as I said, the grassroots organization. You can look it up at codepink.org to find all of the information about that organization. Ariel, I was making a list today of the many nations that we were at war with right now. And I know that the huge bomb in Afghanistan is one. There's North Korea, Yemen, Somalia, Iraq, Syria. Palestine really isn't at war waged with our weaponry and our economic support from the United States to Israel. I noticed also the doomsday clock. That's the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists established this clock in 1947. And for the first time, it's moved as low as it is since that time. It's now at 2.5 minutes to midnight. The number of minutes to midnight is to indicate how close we're coming to global catastrophe. It has been at 3 minutes for a few years and then at 5 minutes for a few years before that, only going one direction. Can you comment on that?
Sure. Well, I think we all remember during the campaign when Trump said that he was going to keep us out of these wars, and he blasted George Bush for dragging us into the Iraq war and called the invasion a big fat mistake. And yet here we are now again, having just shot Tomahawk missiles into Syria and dropping the quote unquote mother of all bombs on Afghanistan. And Trump is asking for an increase in $54 billion in military spending in our budget. That's a 10% increase and would make 60% of our taxes go to military spending. It's just atrocious.
And it's almost incomprehensible to think that we've become that bloated on that side of it, $54 billion increase, and what they want to cut to be able to do it. Can you talk about that?
Sure. Well, they want around a 30% cut to the EPA, which would really devastate it. They want to cut, just gut the State Department, also around 30%. In really doing away with humanitarian assistance. And I want to qualify here and say that while they'll be gutting U.S. aid, the money that we give to Israel every year, currently at 3.1, is earmarked as safe from any of those cuts. So the State Department, the EPA, there'll be slashing education. This would do away with the after-school program for young children, do away with Meals on Wheels, and it really just goes down the list. It's really all of the departments that, you know, we need for life here at home.
And when we talk about them cutting the EPA, I just want to put in that the Pentagon is one of the largest polluters in the world, that all of these missiles and bombing, and when this goes on, this is polluting our air. This is polluting our water. Many of our weaponry in the past have been irradiated metal, so that, in other words, they have a radiation blast in them that ends up causing deformities and other problems in the population that have to live in the areas where there's littering from those bombs. It's pretty scary, this $54 billion. Now, nothing is, the budget hasn't passed yet, right?
No, it hasn't. And this is something we're working very hard on. We need to keep this budget from passing. This is not something that we can afford. And it's not where we want our money to be going to. So there's a number of things that we're doing to try to keep this from going through. So we have a sign-on letter that we're doing with a lot of other organizations opposing the budget. And we also have cities across the country that are working on local resolutions to have their city come out against the budget.
Yeah, I'm very concerned about that. And I'm concerned about the incredible shift to being willing to openly say in this nation that we won't help elderly who have no other way to eat, but we will spend more on bombs, when we're already considered by, I believe the Gallup poll did a 2014 poll of 65 nations and found that we came out in their mind to be the greatest risk to peace in the world. It's the United States itself. So when we think we won't be willing to feed our elderly, we'll literally leave some of them in their homes starving. Because, you know, hopefully we'll try to pick that up, we as individuals and we as charities and states and cities, like you're saying. But it will be felt if this budget passes. It will be felt by the most vulnerable first. Let's talk a little bit about what seems to be the use of the weaponry to awe Americans. One of the quickest responses to the big bomb, what they call the mother of all bombs, I think it has another name here I've got, it's the CBU-13. There seemed to be, the media seemed to indicate that we were really impressed with this as a population. I don't know that that's true, and I'd like you to speak to that, since you work with people all the time about war and about this increase.
Well, first of all, you know, no mother loves a giant bomb, so just the name of it is offensive. This is the largest non-nuclear bomb that's ever been dropped, and it's the largest bomb that's been dropped since Hiroshima and Nagasaki. It's a mother's worst nightmare. And we shouldn't be spending our money to kill people across the world rather than supporting our families and children, you know, here at home, the elderly. Defense spending is already at levels that are way higher than during the Cold War, higher than under President Reagan. And so we have to ask, where is this money going to, especially since the military is smaller? What we're really looking at is a military that's loaded and wasteful, and it's people across the world. It's children and families across the world that pay the price, as well as here at home.
In this latest bomb, this largest of all bombs, the release of photographs of it hitting were from so far above. Of course, you couldn't see any details, but you could certainly see the landscape move in response to this huge thing. But we've been told, you know, that it's something like, I believe, like 26 to 33 ISIS militants were in a cave, underground cave network, and that those were who were killed. And yet Afghans themselves here in town, I remember on Democracy Now! Last week, there was a woman named Wasma Osman from Afghanistan, and she talked about that area, which she is intimately familiar with. And it's not just this desert with underground caves where they caught 33 people, but there are hospitals and towns and villages and homes and people who live in that area, up to about 100,000 people who live in the surrounding area within an hour's distance. So we don't really know who was killed and who was hurt in this bombing.
Absolutely. We don't know who was killed. We know that rather than dropping this bomb, we could have saved the after-school program here in the U.S. And we know that, you know, no life is, you know, we're not looking to lose any lives. So there's no circumstances under which this bombing was a good thing. You know, I think we're looking at Trump loving to play at war. I mean, this is a very dangerous escalation that we're seeing. This, as well as the Tomahawk missiles going into Syria, it's just a very dangerous situation.
Well, and it appears, and I think many Afghanis feel, that this was used as an experiment, that they wanted to utilize this bomb in other efforts. I know that during the Vietnam War, which is a ways back in our listening, our remembrance, but there was a whole network of underground tunnels throughout South Vietnam that was really huge and extensive, that the U.S. was unaware of how far it was, and it was said to have played a major role in the ability of the Vietnamese to throw out the United States there. So I'm wondering if that wasn't when they started trying to make a bomb that could actually go through all the tunnels. But I've also heard someone, someone observing saying, what about the underground nuclear facilities or testing facilities that North Korea has? And was this intended as a message to them as well?
You know, I think either way, this was our government playing at war and Trump showing that he's going to be a president who takes action. And these actions have consequences both across the Middle East and here at home.
I agree with you. And I personally felt that the how close we came to pressuring North Korea, how far we went in bringing that so close is like brinkmanship. We brought it very close to the edge. Certainly North Korea feels very threatened by our warships and our war games and our intent there. And I think that makes it more dangerous for us as well.
Absolutely. And we saw throughout his campaign and until now, Trump talking about increasing our nuclear capacity and then, you know, going into these situations, whether it's with Russia or North Korea, which is, you know, related. And it's we're back in an incredibly, incredibly dangerous situation. The bomb actually won't work on the underground testing facilities. It's not a penetration bomb. It explodes above the ground on the surface.
So it was to blow down into the caves?
You know, I think really it was a show of force.
Yes.
And I think that they've been looking for a long time to play with this bomb. and this was an opportunity.
And I think what we always have to remember every time we hear about U.S. strikes somewhere else in the world is that there are for sure individuals who are innocent who were killed in that. There's no way to not hit it when we're hitting populated areas. I read some statistics, though I think this is actually a little bit higher, but as of February of 2017, there had been, the U.S. had been involved in 15,530 strikes in Iraq and Syria, 7,661 in Syria alone, and that was since the beginning, August 8th, 2014. So we're talking about, how many sorties every day are going out, and I know the American public aren't, even though we'll hear a few things on the news, we aren't conscious of what that means, that we have men and fighter jets flying over a country that's already being bombed and bombed and bombed, and we're continuing it. And so that's pretty striking to me that it can be as many as 15,000 strikes in what is 2 years, 2.5 years.
It's just devastating. And at the same time, we're watching Trump try to refuse entry to refugees from Syria. So we're helping devastate the country and then deny assistance to the refugees that are being created.
I also saw the daily cost of this bombing in Iraq and Syria, and it was estimated at $12.8 million a day for the last 936 days that this study was covering. I believe the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists have more information on that as well. I do want to open up our phone lines, Ariel, to callers who want to ask about other stuff going on, but I also have lots that I want to talk to you about our campaign in Yemen and what we're doing with Somalia and then also Palestine. So as we take our callers, we'll get back to more of those subjects as well. And we do have a caller on the line right now. Now her name is Frances. Frances, go ahead.
Hi. I appreciate your discussion this morning. I'm glad that you're going to be talking about the other countries where the regime changes have already occurred. And while the military-industrial complex is spending all this money, there are people literally suffering from the warmongering in Libya, too. I hope you talk about Libya.
Yes.
Because that was a beautifully created government entity that was just literally destroyed. What I wanted to ask was if you are advocating or supporting the legislation that Congresswoman Tulsi Gabbard has presented. She has the support of Congresswoman Lee and Conyers and several other people. There's a House bill and a Senate bill that is to end the regime change wars, which she proposes are actually financing ISIS.
Okay.
And I wondered if you were aware of it and if you are supporting her efforts.
Ariel, can you address that?
Sure. Well, we absolutely love that Tulsi Gabbard has come out so strongly on this and is really, using her voice right now to come back against it. That's absolutely a fantastic thing, and we support any call not to use weapons and go to war with this. You know, we need this money here at home. The things that we could do with the $54 billion rather than increasing the military budget are just enormous.
And Congresswoman Gabbard is what's this bill? It's called the End of Regime Change.
H.R. 608 is the number.
Say that again.
H.R. 608. And in the Senate, Rand Paul has actually supported her efforts, and the number is S, as in Senate, 532. And I would just hope that people would, voice support for that legislation. She does have other legislators. It's actually bipartisan, and it is to stop the regime change wars and financing so-called terrorists.
All right. Well, thank
you. She's made the correlation.
Yes. Well, thank you very much for that information, Frances. And I want to give out our thank you for calling today. I want to give out our phone number so others can get in on the conversation. It's 503-231-8187. We want to hear from you, both your questions and your comments. I hadn't heard about that House bill or that Senate bill, and I'm glad to hear about it. I think we do, even if we don't think there's much hope of them passing, we have to make it as difficult as possible for them to get through with this horrible budget and with the continuing politics. Ariel, would you like to talk a little bit about Yemen for us and bring people up to date? I know that you've been focusing on that as well.
Sure. So Yemen is just really in a horrific situation, as well as Syria. The situation in Yemen right now is where one child is dying of malnutrition every 10 minutes. It's so desperate. And this is the result of the U.S.-supported Saudi strikes on Yemen. We continue to sell weapons to the Saudis, including the illegal cluster bombs. And these are dropped on civilian populations in Yemen, and they have created a humanitarian crisis that is just, you know, beyond comprehension.
Can you remind us, Ariel, cluster bombs, they're the ones that break apart and leave things that people come into again. Is that correct?
Yes. They break apart, I think, upon impact. And they're illegal under international law for this reason. And the Saudis are getting them from the U.S.
So do we have makers of those in the United States?
We sure do. I think we always want to look at who's profiting from all of these wars, from these escalations, from an increase in military budget. And it's the weapons companies. It's Lockheed Martin. It's Boeing. It's General Dynamics. These are who is profiting while the rest of us are paying the price.
Yeah, I remember they said Raytheon stock went up when their missiles were used. It's kind of obscene when we look at it that way. It's the obscene off-screen sort of betting on war through the stock market. And I personally find it disgusting, the thought that, oh boy, this is a new area for your profit. And that for some people whose mutual funds or whose investments, they are not aware of the hundreds of things they're invested in, they may have just been invested in that bomb, that missile.
Absolutely. You know, so the U.S. has been supporting the Islamic State indirectly through Saudi Arabia, through Turkey and Qatar for many years. And this is part of the serious problem. It's part of the problem in Syria. And obviously in Yemen receives all of its food through one single port, and it's there's a naval blockade of it. The U.S. has over $100 billion in weapons deals with the Saudis. So, you know, we're very much creating these problems.
Well, and we keep saying the Houthi rebels, but I was covering Yemen many years ago, and the Houthi weren't rebels. They were an indigenous group, a clan, a thousands years old clan that lived in the area that the Saudis want to have for themselves. And so Saudi Arabia has minded them being in their own northern territory all these years, but they were at times in disagreement with other large clans within Yemen, which had been really not all one country very long, almost only about 40 years. But these were not, they tried to call them terrorists. We're giving the aid to the Saudi Arabia to kill these people because they're terrorists, or we're giving them aid because these rebels are attacking Saudi Arabia. And that's not the accurate history at all.
Sure, absolutely. And, you know, I think we can say that any time we're giving billions of dollars in weapons or making arms deals for billions of dollars, it's always to do harm. And this is never a situation where we're helping people with these arms deals, whether it's weapons deals with Saudi Arabia or U.S. military aid to Israel. It goes to harm civilian populations.
I also see that we tend to leave what I consider in our wake countries that are then disorganized. We've done that with Somalia. We've played a strong role in Somalia over the years, and we have twice helped put their historic enemies in their nation as supposed peacekeepers. I'm speaking about Kenyans and Ethiopians. I don't think that's unintentional. I don't think that I know that those are historic enemies and the United States government does not. I think it's been purposeful, and it means that there will not be any stable government in Somalia as long as those kinds of solutions are sought. So it's hard to believe that we're seeking even sometimes regime change as much as regime destruction, and that with a not well-functioning government or strong government, the ability to extract gold, to extract all sorts of minerals that we use is more possible. We do that in the Congo as well. So I sometimes look at what we're doing and thinking we're purposely creating devastated lands where people are starving and there's no stability, because it allows the United States to carry forth its other policies.
Sure. And again, we want to look at who's benefiting from this. You know, it's weapons industries and it's the environment that pays a price. There are 24 million refugees who've been forced out of their homes and countries. This is more than any time at any time during World War II. And at the same time, Trump is looking to impose Muslim bans and cut humanitarian assistance, which is already meager. We already allow a very meager number of refugees into the U.S. And so we're making a bad situation far, far worse.
Yes. We have a caller on the line. I want to give other people that number now so that you can get lined up and get your calls in. It's 503-231-8187. And I believe we have Andrew. Welcome, Andrew. Hello, Andrew. Oh, I'm sorry, Andrew. Call back if you would like. We lost you. I'd love to hear from you. I'd like to hear from all of the rest. Now, what kind of activities is Code Pink involved in during this escalation of war? Can you give us a little overview of the type of work that you guys have been doing?
Sure. Well, the other day we were out in front of the United Nations in New York City as part of a hunger strike. In solidarity with the people who are starving in Yemen, and calling for more diplomacy and more humanitarian aid rather than these, you know, military solutions, which just make things far, far worse.
I had heard about that fast, and I was glad to hear that you were doing that. I find it hard to even put in my mind that a child could die every 10 minutes from starvation there because of this war that we have been funding. And you know, it was just tax day. And I know that I would be willing to bet the majority of Americans would not be happy to see the dead bodies that we have left behind.
Absolutely. And, you know, we're coming up on Mother's Day as well. And as you said, I'm a mother myself, and I can't imagine, you know, watching your child die of malnutrition and starvation, which is imposed by these man-made humanitarian disasters.
Yes.
So
we do have another caller on the line. I want to Andrew got back. Let's go ahead and get to Andrew then.
Hey.
Hi. Welcome.
So my question was, like, what can we do? You know, we hear about this stuff all the time, and it's really hard. And I just feel so overwhelmed that I just don't know where to start.
I hear you. I sometimes feel like I'm with you on that. Ariel, why don't you say what you'd like to say about that?
Sure. So, you know, I think we all often feel that way, and it's really, really overwhelming. So I want to go into one of the things that we're doing and ways that you can get involved, which is we're working locally with organizations locally with communities to have their cities pass resolutions to oppose this $54 billion increase. And we're going to be having a webinar next Tuesday to talk about this. And you can email Mariana. It's Mariana at Code Pink, and join the webinar and hear so that you can listen to how your city can get involved in saying no to this horrific increase in military aid.
Well, that's certainly interesting. Now, you're saying Tuesday, this coming Tuesday, so that is, if you can grab the date for me, I don't have a calendar in front of me. And what time of day is that webinar going to be taking place?
It's going to be 8:30 Eastern time, 8:30 p.m., that's 5:30 Pacific. And we'd love to have you get involved. And I want to talk about another really concrete thing that you can do. One of the main things that I work on is boycott, divestment, and sanctions, which is a campaign for Palestinian freedom. And so that's something really concrete that you can do. There's a lot of campaigns that you can get involved in. And so we have a lot of, you know, things like this that you can do locally.
I think there's also an organization that meets every Friday at 5 p.m. down at Pioneer Square. And I'm not going to give their name accurately, but I'm going to say I think they're Portland Peaceful Resistance, an affinity group. But they do meet there at Pioneer Square every Friday, and they are more than happy to have you join them. And I believe they did have a larger march this last Friday. So, Andrew, if that helps at all.
It sounds like a good place to start.
Yeah, just getting hooked up with other people. And I do know that we're coming up on April 29th. I think there's going to be a National Day for the Environment. And there's also going to be May Day. And I think at both of those, an anti-war message on your sign or a group of your friends with an anti-war message is fine, because they're absolutely linked. Everyone's talking these days about intersectionality. Well, you know, you can't talk about destruction of the environment if you're ignoring the war that's polluting so much and damaging so much of our environment. And you can't really talk about, you know, anything nowadays without the war budget being something that's going to directly impact it. So I think put your anti-war signs up there with the appropriate message and head out to those demonstrations, which I know we'll have here in Portland.
Okay. Well, thank you so much.
It's all connected. We can't just work on the environment without seeing the role that the U.S. military plays in environmental destruction. The U.S. military serves as a security force for protecting the extraction of fossil fuels.
Yes, around the world, actually, don't
and
they?
In the Middle East and all across the world. And, you know, it's enabling the continued assault on our planet and on impoverished populations.
Yes.
All to ensure the cheap supply of fossil fuels.
And I want to thank you, Andrew, for calling. We do have another caller. It's Mark. Mark, thank you for calling. You're on.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, I just wanted to say that I actually spent a week out of Standing Rock.
I'm sorry, there was some noise in the background there, and I couldn't hear what you said. Could you say it again?
Yes, ma'am. I was at Standing Rock and out in North Dakota, and, you know, the militarization of our police forces, along with, you know, our military budget is the only item in our budget that's double digits. Everything else is single digits. Everything, from health care to education.
Single digits in the billions or in the millions?
Yeah.
Yes.
Billions.
And we're still hearing, if you can hold still and by your phone, we'll hear you better.
Okay, is that better?
Yeah, way better. Thanks.
Okay, I'm sorry. But essentially, America has become an oil company with the most powerful military in the world. I watched as militarized police beat elders in prayer, shot medics with rubber bullets, concussion grenades, hosing people down. And this is happening in our own country, and people just don't care. Unaware of it, our entire state went Democrat. When everybody in the Green Party has known for the past 8 years we're bombing seven countries, well, every Democrat in the state looked at you and rolled their eyes like, no, we're not. Now we're scrambling. Okay, what's the fix? What do we do now? Well, why did everybody ignore Jill Stein? Why did everybody ignore the Green Party? And why did everybody run out and vote for evil and lesser evil? See, that's my concern, is how we have a whole country that ran out and voted for evil or lesser evil.
I hear what you're saying, Mark, and I know that I often have that same concern. It seems, though, that sometimes it takes different kinds of, large events to wake up the public. I don't believe the overwhelming majority of us really are gleeful about war if we could know it. And I think the biggest problem that we have in this nation to resisting our government is propaganda in the form of our daily TV. And I don't just mean news or particular news put out, but about how issues are handled, even on comedy shows or on, in the background, in how people live. And that I think the most important thing for us is places like KBOO. Actually, I wasn't going to say that when I started
Absolutely.
It, but I was going to
say. Well, that's right. That's the thing I wanted to also go back on is the lies from our government, the lies from the media. The Bay of Tonkin never happened.
Right.
It was the whole
Gulf
reason
Tonkin,
we
yeah.
went to war with Vietnam. It never happened. Nobody knows that. It never happened. I mean, the media came out, told everybody that our ships were bombed in the Bay of Tonkin and we had to retaliate. This is what they do. They lie, they smear, and it's the same way we handle our elections.
Right.
We take good people, we smear them, we put them down, and we get what the corporations get what they want.
Yes. I'm going to tell you what Lenin said to the question, what is to be done? He actually has long dead, Marxism, Leninism, one of the founders of that is Lenin. And he said, what is to be done? And his answer really, I hear people saying that phrase, what is to be done? His answer was create public opinion, seize power. And I don't know about seizing power, but the point is that they've actually learned that lesson. The ruling oligarchy understands the role that media plays and works hard to keep us from understanding the reality of what we're doing out there in the world. And so I'd say any way that you can get information, truthful information out to people is a way for you to have your voice heard, but have the truth heard too. And we need to make sure that we're doing that. I think it doesn't do us any good to turn our backs on our fellow Americans and think that they, with the right facts, can't make the right decision. So we need to be able to figure out how to persuade our fellow Americans, too. I think that's very important.
The other issue you guys have brought up is this whole capitalism idea. There are so many people trapped in a paycheck that they are willing to go out on the reservation and beat people to get a paycheck. There's people in the military that you see in their eyes, they didn't want to be there at Standing Rock. But then there's the ones that, the Dracos that want to cause damage, that want to beat people, that want to incite violence. And you're right. There's a whole mentality of people out there that, keeps us locked into this patriarchal, violent world that we're in.
Well, thank you, Mark. I'm gonna let you go now. We'll discuss this a little further, and we're gonna make sure that we have the phone number out there. It's 503-231-8187. And I want to let people know what's coming up today on KBOO. At 10, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. It's tensions on the Korean Peninsula, medical dangers of vaping marijuana, and Martin Lee from the Project CBD and the author of Smoke Signals. That's on Flashpoints. At 11, The Food Show comes on, and it talks to Sandor Katz about his book, Wild Fermentation, plus Joan Nathan and her new Jewish cookbook, King Solomon's Table. Thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support. If you've not yet a member, you can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on donate. I said that I thought that supporting places like KBOO was what is to be done, and I really do mean that. I mean supporting KBOO, but I mean finding your own other medias. Become a tweeter. I know Cold Pink uses Twitter quite a bit. Isn't that right, Ariel?
Absolutely. You can follow us at Code Pink. That's our Twitter handle.
Uh-huh.
And I wanted to say that, he's absolutely correct that this is coming home. Our the U.S. foreign militarized foreign policy comes home to us in domestic law enforcement. You know, we've got the 1033 program, which is to transfer excess military equipment to civilian law enforcement agencies. And that's just, you know, one of the ways that we end up seeing these same, you know, weapons right on our streets, whether it's Standing Rock or Ferguson.
Or Portland. Portland, we use Portland. Very, very horrible mixes of pepper spray and mace and tear gas. I haven't seen as much use of that yet with our new mayor, but we sent our police about a decade ago to our police chief. We sent him to Israel to learn, quote, crowd control, and they came back with these trucks where they drive into a demonstration with men lining the outside of the truck so they can jump out immediately in their what looked to me like stormtrooper gear. So we have a pretty violent, militarized policing here, and we do know that those are supposedly surplus weapons that they get as grants through Homeland Security for a lot of the weaponry and that they are using. So yeah, we see it on our streets a lot, and I'll be honest, I'm surprised at how much we put up with the use of chemical weapons against Americans here. Those gases and sprays they use are very toxic and very harmful. They're not just, oh, that's painful and your eyes water a little bit. They're far, far worse than that.
No, it's massive weaponization of local police forces. And you mentioned the trainings in Israel. We have, you know, numerous U.S. police forces that either go over to Israel to train or Israel sends some of their people over here to do the training. This is largely organized through the Anti-Defamation League. They organize a lot of these trainings. Yep, absolutely. And it's teaching how to control populations. And we're also looking at, you know, many of the same companies that are really complicit in this. So, for example, Hewlett-Packard, which is one of the main targets of the boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement, and they're targeted for their role in the occupation and apartheid system in Israel. They make biometric ID cards that discriminate between Palestinians and Jewish citizens. They're in the prisons there. And then we look over here, and they're also contracting with U.S. prisons and with Immigration Customs and Enforcement to aid with deportations here and to create also databases for population control. So, you know, it's all very interconnected. And again, it goes back to, you know, who's benefiting from this.
Yes. Well, I wanted to correct something I said earlier. I didn't have the correct name for the organization that meets every Friday at 5 p.m. It's Portland Peaceful Response Coalition, and that's Pioneer Courthouse Square every Friday at 5 p.m. That means this Friday, if you're feeling like, oh, my gosh. Are you by any chance rustling paper there, Ariel?
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Yep, we could hear it. That's okay. Just hold it still if you can for a moment. But so that organization, Portland Peaceful Response Coalition, every Friday, 5 p.m., the corner of Southwest Yamhill and Broadway, these are dedicated people who've been fighting the war machine for a very long time. I like that you keep bringing up, Ariel, the profit and the profit-making part of it, because I sometimes do feel that keeping continuous warfare going, as we have done in Afghanistan, the longest war the United States has ever been in and is still in, that when we are doing that kind of thing, we can stop seeing it and stop recognizing it for what it is and what we need to do. And yet the companies are there. I believe in Afghanistan, there's a major pipeline that went ahead and got is being developed there going through. When you say our forces are really security forces for fossil fuel, in many ways, that is what they're doing.
Sure, absolutely. It's the securing of fossil fuels. And it's also the weapons sales. So Barack Obama had halted some of our arms sales to Saudi Arabia following some pretty horrific images that came home of killings of civilians. And, you know, Trump is now looking to reopen one of these massive deals that had been halted.
At the same time as the Justice Department under Trump is trying to back out of deals where they were, I think they're called consent decrees, with cities that had used too much force, and these were federal rules that were working with the cities to be able to have the police forces less brutal and more responsive. And he is working hard to get rid of all of those. So in other words, allow the police to be more free to do illegal actions against the American public at the same time as he's wanting to increase it abroad. I'm wondering how, and I'm wanting to ask our audience out there actually to call in about this. It's 503-231-8187. How concerned have you been with this rapid escalation that it's really going to put us in significant danger here in this country?
So, you know, it's incredibly concerning, and I think we have to be concerned anytime we're looking at escalation. And you know, this is when people become really desperate, this is when they're more likely to join extremist groups. And the violence comes home to us, absolutely. We're creating our own enemies through this.
Well, and we've used as an excuse with Yemen that there's something we called the, I think we called it Al-Qaeda of the, Arabian Peninsula. And whatever actions that were taking place there were relatively small, were relatively minor compared to every other nation where there is that kind of force. And yet we use that as an excuse to continue and to support Saudi Arabia. And I think once we began supporting Saudi Arabia in northern Yemen, we really just pulled off any pretense. There can be no pretense. There's no good excuse for that amount of money or violence and seeing it as actually beneficial to the United States or in any way protecting the United States. We have to remember, none of the countries that I've named have ever attacked the United States. Not one of them. Afghanistan, North Korea, Yemen, Somalia, Iraq, Syria, Palestine. None of them have.
No, but we can notice that when Trump came out with his initial list of countries for which we would have entry bans, Saudi Arabia was not on that list, despite the, what we've seen of the 9/11 attackers.
I believe all of them came from there, and the funding came from there. And we also know that the funding of much of the what was called Al-Qaeda came initially from Saudi Arabia in Afghanistan.
Sure. I mean, Saudi Arabia is one of the most repressive regimes in the world. It's a place where women are not allowed to drive. They have to have a male guardian in order to attend university, where we have beheadings of dissidents. And it's a country that the U.S. is continuing to provide with more weapons.
Exactly. And we do have another caller on the line. It's Natano. Natano, thanks for joining us.
Hey, you bet. Good show. It's just so hypocritical that, you know, we have this relationship with Saudi Arabia because it's like the worst of the worst of the Wahhabists and why we're, you know, in this so-called war on terror. But whenever I hear people talking about the wars dragging on, I just kind of get a little bit more motivated to chime in, because what's the difference between World War II and all the wars since then?
It was over quicker.
Yeah. Why is that? Because it was run by the government instead of private corporations. So since we've privatized warfare, they go on and on and on forever. They're like corporate, they're welfare programs for the defense contractors.
I think you're right.
And we just, we just need to spread that word, acknowledge that, and adopt that meme, and just let people know that this is what happens when you privatize a government agency. It turns into a big, huge, suction device on the government tea, because it's it's sucking so many things, not just money, but resources. And, you know, the military is probably the worst thing for the environment.
Yes, absolutely.
Agency. So, and you were talking before about what can we do. I think the number one thing we can do, and why towns like Portland and Madison, Wisconsin, and these places are so much different, is because they have a resource like KBOO where people can become informed and engaged. And we need to look at starting what I call rural radio initiative, where we can get radio stations or repeaters into more and more areas and allow people to have a choice between the screech and preach, you know, liberal media, which is not liberal, and some real information. Because, you know, people call in the rural areas, the media is always liberal, but all you get is Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, and Bill O'Reilly competing for the same slot.
Yeah, I remember living in Eastern Oregon as a child, and of course there was way less media then too, but it was always one, and it was Paul Harvey.
Right.
I always got to hear.
Yep.
I used to say to my mom, "Mom, that's a mean man. Turn him off."
But that was your only option. It's like you can turn it off or you can listen to that.
Yeah, and my mom would laugh and she'd say, "Well, I want to hear what he says anyway." She did not like him, but you know, that was like you're saying, the only news we had. And I know a few years ago, because I also work with the KBOO Evening News, that radio stations, I'm not remembering which conglomeration of them, but over 60% of daily radio stations have the same news. They have it packaged so that it sounds like it's coming from your area, but it's all one news source of formerly, I think, like the AP type news. So we're not just even getting it casually, let alone on what is said to be news about what's happening around the world. So thank you, Natano, for calling
me. You're welcome. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. We have a couple more minutes if anybody else would like to call. It's 503-231-8187. Can you talk a little bit about, you know, I know some people, we've got Palestine in here as I've got it on my list of countries we're at war with. And I know that it doesn't quite fit that in the same way, but I do believe it does fit it, because we are paying for the violence that's being conducted against them from Israel.
Sure. Well,
and we're giving them, you know, all sorts of other aid as well.
And we've just increased under Obama. We increased what that military aid will be over the next 10 years. During the last assault on Gaza in 2014, we refilled their munitions when they were running low on munitions. And this is an assault where over 550 children were killed. And, you know, one of the similarities also that we watch, you know, in terms of Israel and that we just see across the board, we were just talking about, is media complicity. So after this recent strike on Syria, all of the mainstream news just praised Trump and, you know, beat the drums of war to the point of saying that these missile strikes were beautiful.
That was Brian Williams.
Poetic. Yes, waxing poetic about death and destruction. And so, we also see a real media silence around Israel's occupation of Palestine and violations of human rights. And so, you know, absolutely, we have to get access to what's going on, and we have to be able to undo this, applauding of death.
Yeah, I think we need to really call that out as disgusting, that there's nothing. Would he have stood at a lynching? Brian Williams really bothers me that it's back on TV, because he was taken off TV because he was found in two cases to have misstated, in other words, lied about his own involvement while he was embedded and how much risk he was at. I think that we have too many reporters who are enamored by the military, and we have so many programs, and that's one thing we haven't talked about much here, but trying to make it that, you know, every soldier is a hero. We have to we glorify the military and the actions they take and the individuals there. And we must know that just is not true. The people who are in the military are regular people like everybody else. And some of them do really horrendous things and some of them try hard not to. And all of them are in service of U.S. war making around the world. I think it's so wrong when we say, I don't know if we want to say, I thank you for your service. Are we thanking them for killing people? We need to turn this narrative around.
Absolutely. We need to be applauding the peacemakers, and we need to hold our media accountable to calling for humanitarian assistance, for ending the naval blockade in Yemen, for
allowing aid to get through.
Absolutely. And that's what our media should be calling for and should be applauding when we're able to reach and assist with diplomatic efforts and get humanitarian aid in, when we're able to end these, you know, also the blockade of Gaza, which is also a stranglehold on the population.
Yes, we keep them and even really lock people there. If they want to stay with loved ones, they can't leave and come back often. And if you marry someone from out of Gaza, you have to go live in Gaza and stay there. You can't come out again. It's really like a prison in many ways and horrifying. I really want to thank you. This is Linda Olson Osterlund for Political Perspectives. I've been speaking with Code Pink member Ariel Gold. She heads up their Middle East Affairs area and has worked many years on the issues of Palestine and now on all these other countries. I really want to thank you, Ariel, for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me on.
And I want to remind people that there is a webinar coming up on this upcoming Tuesday. It's going to be at 5:30 p.m. Pacific time. And you can find out more about that by going to Mariana. Do you want to spell that?
Mariana. Yes. Mariana at codepink.org.
And that webinar is going to talk about?
We're going to be talking about how local cities can get resolutions passed opposing Trump's budget, where he wants to increase military spending by $54 billion. And some cities have already had this done, so we'll be listening to people talk about the successes that they've had and listening to people in cities that are currently working on it and provide